Amen. We're going to read from John's Gospel this evening, verse 55 of chapter 11 into chapter 12. John chapter 11, beginning at verse 55. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. They were looking for Jesus, and saying to one another as they stood in the temple, "What do you think, that he will not come to the feast at all?" Now the chief priests and the Pharisees had given orders that if anyone knew where he was, he should let them know, so that they might arrest him. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at table. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to whatever was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me." When the large crowd of the Jews learned that Jesus was there, they came not only on account of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to put Lazarus to death as well, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus.
Let me begin. How good are you at recognising what something is worth? Not long ago, my daughter and I went to the National Gallery in Trafalgar Square, not too far from us in London, and we were going to see a particular artwork. It's unthinkable, really, that this would ever now be sold or put on the market. If it was, no doubt the bidding would start at 100 million, only to go much higher. I reminded my daughter later that day of the time I'd taken her and her brothers to the same place maybe over 10 years ago. Later that day, one of my sons was asked, "What did you enjoy most about the National Gallery?" And immediately with a straight face, he said, "Leaving the building." No appreciation whatsoever that he had just seen some of the most beautiful and valuable objects on earth. But let me ask, have we discovered what is of true value? Deep and lasting value. It's what life is about. We try to find out what is valuable and then we give our life for it. And so for us, what should that be? Well, our passage this evening is all about value. It challenges us in particular to how we will respond to what we've been hearing all weekend from this chapter in John chapter 11, because we have witnessed astonishing events. We've seen them. Jesus standing outside a tomb, come out Lazarus to a corpse, but out he walks. We've seen this astounding demonstration of what Jesus can do. He is the life giver this world needs. But that's not all we've seen. We've had an explanation of how Jesus gives this life. It's all about his death. He would die for the people so that he could gather in the scattered children of God. But so what? At the end of this weekend, at the end of this chapter, where does that leave us? Where do we go from here? And John, as ever, is very careful with what he writes. He tells us about, well, the chief priests and Judas and Mary, telling us, have a think. What do you see with them about how we should respond? So the scene is set for us in verse 55. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. So the Passover festival fast approaching, it's busy. And you can imagine as everyone gathered in Jerusalem, the talk would have been about one person and what he had done. Verse 56, they were looking for Jesus and saying to one another as they stood in the temple, what do you think? That he'll not come to the feast at all? So obviously everyone is asking, will Jesus come? Will we see him? Will we see what he can do? And there's one group of characters John highlights to begin with, which is the chief priests, verse 57. Now, the chief priests and the Pharisees, the religious leaders, had given orders that if anyone knew where he was, he should let them know so that they might arrest him. So the crowds were keen to see Jesus, they were excited, but they weren't the only ones. The religious leaders wanted to know too, because astonishingly, Jesus is the man on the poster, most wanted. Because Jesus had committed, hadn't he, such awful acts. He'd raised the dead. He'd given certain hope beyond the grave. So the religious leaders thought, we can't leave a man like that on the loose. Who knows what he would do? But as they discussed, they realized they'd had to add another name to the most wanted list. Look down to verse 9. When the large crowd of the Jews learned that Jesus was there, they came not only on account of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to put Lazarus to death as well, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing in Jesus. Because you can imagine, can't you, overhearing the conversation between two of those in Jerusalem. One says, you'll never guess who I saw in Tesco's. Who? Lazarus from Bethany. Don't be crazy. We were at the funeral, so sad, with Mary and Martha. Haven't you heard? And I was there. I saw it. Lazarus with my own eyes. To which the other would head straight off to see if he could find Lazarus as well. Because everybody knows, what are you talking about? Dead people stay dead. Except that they don't. And Bethany, there was living proof. This man, Lazarus, wonderful evidence of the life-giving power of Jesus. And so the chief priests want Lazarus dead again. It's almost unbelievable, isn't it, that they would respond like this. We're meant to think that it is shocking. Why would you kill a resurrected Lazarus and kill the man who could do this? And yet, all these years later, think of our society. Quite a few, don't they? They don't initially object to Jesus. Some of them are religious, like these leaders, might be in Easter services this weekend. But we've seen it. Again, if they hear of the living Jesus and what he stood for, they resist it. They don't want it. In fact, they want to be rid of it. They want to be rid of Jesus, which is just as crazy today as it was back then. So that's the chief priest. Next, Judas and Mary. And we find them just outside the city at a meal in Bethany. So chapter 12, verse 1. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at table. Wow. Can you imagine being at that dinner party? Amazing. Maybe it was a celebration, of course, of what had recently taken place. I mean, just imagine the conversation. I mean, what would you say to Lazarus? What was it like to be dead, to be rotting? Jesus was there too. What would you say to him, the one who can call out the dead from the tomb? Well, anyway, presumably the meal goes on. And what do you hope for when you host friends or have them round? Well, you just want people to enjoy everyone's company, to get on well, enjoy the food, entertaining conversation. I guess what we're always trying to avoid is awkwardness, anyone feeling uncomfortable. We don't want people feeling uneasy. But Mary, it seems, doesn't seem to have got the memo, the message. Look at verse 3. Mary, therefore, took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. It's worth just trying to get ourselves into the shoes of that dinner party and imagining being there. Because everyone would have known that perfume was no just bottle off the shelf in Tesco's. This was a family heirloom. It would be worth a year's wages. And yet, here it is being taken by Mary and emptied and poured all in one go on the feet of Jesus. And then wiped, not with a towel, but with her very own hair. Imagine being there. The stunned silence. The guests, where were they meant to look? No doubt they'd have justified it. They said, well, yeah, okay, fair enough. I guess if your brother has been dead and comes back to life, you're going to be pretty happy and you want to show it. But was this really necessary? Also over the top. It's, if you like, the most awkward dinner party ever. But eventually the ice is broken by our next character, which is Judas in verse 4. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he was about to betray him, said, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? Which is a very good question, isn't it? So yes, the perfume could be sold, bring in a sizable amount of money and given to good causes. And same today, people both inside and outside the church are not slow to tell the church how you should spend your money. You should feed the hungry, clothe the homeless, speak out against oppression. And no doubt Judas was hoping that this question from him would set up Jesus to affirm what he was saying. Well, we've seen Mary's astonishing act, but maybe Jesus' response is all the more stunning. Verse 7. Jesus said, leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me. So Jesus is backing Mary, isn't he? He's coming to her defense. And he is saying what she is doing here is entirely appropriate. It's right. But as he does that, look at the staggering claims he makes. He does claim to be in a class all by himself. I mean, it's been obvious so far, but he does it again. We know Jesus was concerned for the poor. He spoke out on their behalf. But he says, at this point, when he's not going to be there for much longer, everyone's focus should be on him. And especially, Jesus says, the focus is to be on his death. And it seems Mary got that. And Jesus says she anointed him with a view to his burial. Because Jesus knows that's coming now really fast, just a few days away. And Jesus knows that's actually the plan. He has chosen this, determined to die. He knows what it's going to be achieving. Taking away the judgment of God to bring resurrection life for his people. And the point is, again, have you realized the wonder of what Jesus achieved by his death and its value? That's why we're given Mary. Why we should see how extravagant this response is. The world can't get it, but can we? Back in the days of the Civil War in America, a young slave girl was being sold at auction. It was a desperate situation. She could do nothing. Who knows what went through her mind as she wondered, what will await me after someone buys me? Well, it's a true story. The auction proceeded and she was purchased. And as she walked away from the auction with her new owner, he turned to her and said, you're free. She was amazed. She responded, you're saying I'm free to do whatever I want? Yes. To say whatever I want to say? Yes. To be whoever I want to be? Yes. To go wherever I want to go? Yes. He said with a smile, you can go wherever you choose. And she looked at him intently and replied, then I will go with you. When we grasp what Jesus has done for us, it does change everything. It's focused on his death. We get what that has achieved. And we see what Jesus has done for us. And we want to give our life to him. We'll be like this woman. We'll do extravagant things, things our world doesn't understand, because we get Jesus. Unlike Judas, of course. Now, as we read this, we know he's the bad guy, but those in Bethany that day wouldn't have known this just yet. In fact, look at verse 4. The first description we're given is one of the disciples. So picture Judas. Where would you find him? Usually somewhere near Jesus. He'd be talking, if you like, about Christian things. As we've heard, he would be talking about helping others. In fact, this is alarmingly close to home. He'd likely be in a church. He might even be on the church council, on a committee, arranging things. Everyone would assume, yeah, he's committed. But this is showing us such things and don't necessarily reflect the heart. Look at verse 6. Judas said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Money does exert such a powerful hold, doesn't it, on all of us. And for Judas, even though he'd witnessed everything, he'd seen it in Bethany, he didn't deny that Jesus had done that, but he still doesn't realize that Jesus offers what money can't buy. So much so, Judas had lived with him, heard the teaching, witnessed the miracles, everything. But now he was ready to betray Jesus, essentially to kill him. Why would Judas do this? And the answer is the death of Jesus. But in the sense that, imagine maybe if Jesus would have been like a gladiator going to Jerusalem to lose his life in a glorious battle with the Romans. Well, Judas would have liked that. Maybe he could have sold the film or the book rights for millions. But as he heard Jesus speaking about the way he was going to die, this humiliating, shameful death on a cross, you can imagine Judas thinking, this is not what I signed up to. He's more concerned, really, with what the world had to offer. And now Judas thinks his interests are best served by those few pieces of silver he might get if he betrays Jesus. Do you see what John, our gospel writer, has done? He's put Mary and Judas side by side so we look at both of them and are challenged. Get us thinking. We've got to decide, well, what value, after all that we've seen this weekend, do I put on Jesus' death? And not just in principle, in our thinking, but this challenges us a little bit further. But in practice, if I was to ask you, what's this passage about? What's the theme that ties it together? Well, of course, ultimately, it's about Jesus. And it's about his death. That is the focus. But when we come to these responses, there's a common thread, isn't there? Money and the resources that are like it. Did you see that? For both Mary and Judas, we can get a sense of what's going on in their heart by the way that they value things and use what they have that is of value. Now, St. Helens, the church where I minister, it is in the heart of the Square Mile, that is the financial district of central London. We are surrounded by the offices of these international banks, and we do see people in their expensive suits on their phones brokering the latest deal. The press bashes them all, but in a sense they're right. Yes, money does drive what is going on around us. Okay, it's obvious there, but it's just as true, isn't it, everywhere else? Money matters to everyone, even if it's not so obvious, which is why Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And John is saying, well, money and resources matter in the sense that they will reveal, how you use them will show where your heart is. So it's a challenge, this passage, for our churches. How will they and we use our resources? Not long ago, when someone discovered I was a vicar, which I am, they asked in all seriousness with a straight face, oh, do you like jumble sales? More regularly, I'm often asked, is there even a need for a church in the heart of the financial district of London? Because what's the assumption? Again, oh, the church, that's just to help the poor, not the affluent. And sometimes churches give that impression themselves, don't they? They busy themselves with certain mercy-type ministries, and the world says, well done them. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I very much hope and pray that our church is the most loving, sacrificially generous organisations making a difference in our communities. We clearly must love our neighbours practically. But that's not what we're about, ultimately. Because we have something more valuable to offer to them. Because those around us have a far more urgent and desperate need. Because they are facing death, as we all are. We know where life comes from, the Jesus who died for his people. So it makes sense that churches that get this will focus their energy and time and resources on Christ and his death and on making this known to as many as possible. Now, the world just doesn't get this, does it? It will accuse us of wasting money. Well, no surprise, given what we've seen with Judas in this passage. The world just doesn't see the value of the death of Christ. Churches do, so we will proclaim Christ and him crucified and put our energies into that. I've spoken about churches, but the same will apply to us individually. In the light of eternity, our wealth, and with that our health, our work, our reputation, well, they're all going to be gone oh so soon. We can't keep hold of them, but we can use them and put them to good use. So this challenges us from this passage. Where are our personal resources going to go? Now, maybe as I say this, we might feel we haven't got riches like Mary seemed to have had. Well, maybe we haven't, or maybe we've got more than we realise. But we don't worry about what we don't have. God knows about that. He doesn't ask what we don't have from us. What about what we do have? Whatever resources it is, whether it's money or time or energy or gifts or opportunities. The issue is, what are we going to do with those things? And the way we use them does show to what extent we've grasped the wonder of Jesus and his death, that they are so valuable. So we'll be asking regularly, of what the Lord has entrusted to me, how can I give them to what really matters? So as we come to a close, let me ask a question. Does your life make sense? Now, not long ago, had you gone for a stroll through central London one evening, you may well have come across me dancing energetically in public, in fact, to K-pop, in full view of hundreds, if not more. Now, even for the very little you know of me, does that make sense to you? Well, it's actually a true story. That was the day my daughter and I went to the National Gallery. As we came out, there was mass public K-pop dancing in Trafalgar Square. My daughter really wanted to join in and tugged at my sleeve. Now, if I was in Trafalgar Square with any of you, would I have joined in? Absolutely not. But with my daughter, it's a different story. Well, likewise, does our life make sense to a watching world? That is, as the world looks at us, do we kind of fit in? They get it. It may be we've got the hobby of church activities, but apart from that, we're basically like everybody else. Or to a watching world, to those who just know us a little bit, well, they find us a little bit unsettling because there are things that we do, there are patterns in our life, there's the way that we use our money that just makes no sense to them. And it makes no sense because they don't get Jesus or the value of his death. But because we do, well, that changes everything. Well, with that, we're going to leave Bethany now. So from here on, as we know, those religious leaders act quickly and soon Jesus will be dead. But having seen what we've had in John 11, well, events, those there have made their mark, haven't they? We've got it. Jesus has defeated death because of his death. And Mary has now shown us how to view that death and to respond to it. His death is precious, really of incalculable value. And so now it is to be proclaimed in all the world with all of our lives.